Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, April 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our pal, author, historian, educator, grain agitator, Amy Halloran. She's a great baker. She loves flour. She loves grains. We love having her on the show. I have no idea what we'll talk about, but it'll be something. If you want to join in and share the love, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You like flour? You like grain? You like pieces of bread? Well, we have a show for you. 800-348-2551. The great Amy Halloran and your calls coming up after the news. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday today, and we have our friend Amy Halloran back in the house. She made some bread. It's very sticky, and it got on my hands right before we went in to the show. And I'm going to castigate her verily about that in a moment. Amy is a writer, an activist, a great baker. She is interested in the history of bakeries in our region. She is the author of the new bread basket and apparently is a magazine writer as well, which I didn't know until a moment ago. She's always a favorite on this show. I don't know where we're going to end up, but give us a call. You want to talk grain, you want to talk flour, you want to talk baking. It's a Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Amy Halloran, how the heck are you?
Well, Ray, I am very happy because you always inspire me. Today's Good Friday, and
that's
you always
correct.
Inspire me to go down the road of the Fryhoffer's hot cross bun. Are we going to get there?
Oh, and that's why this is sticky.
That's now, why it's sticky.
I thought it was just a regular bread, mm-mm. and then I touched
no, no,
it.
No, no, no. It's a hot cross bun without a cross on it, the way that Fryhoffer's would do it. Every year I try to get the cinnamon on top right. Remember that cinnamon topping?
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course I do, yeah.
Well, that stickiness on the bottom is right, but the top,
it looks
I
like
still the, don't have it.
Looks like a fine regular yeast bread.
It is.
But it's not. It's a secret. Yeah, wait a minute. Did you say that the real hot cross buns used to have hot crosses on them?
They have crosses on them, and you're supposed to have them only on Good Friday.
Really? I didn't
which
know that.
Which is maybe why, you know, remember how Fryhoffer's had the ones without the cross
yeah.
on it?
Yeah.
Perhaps that's why. It's because we could eat them all Lent. You could also get the one with the cross.
But that was extra?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was just, it didn't have that nice cinnamony topping that I'm trying to replicate. And today I put a little molasses in there.
Neato. Well, yeah. I'll have a bite in a bit. I got a feeling if I do this again, I won't be able to press any buttons.
So very sticky.
I'll do it during the break and then I'll hose down. You wrote, I didn't know this. Now, you know, I know Haley over at the Edible Capital District. She's going to be on with Jennifer early May. They send me a copy every time they do a new one. I didn't thumb through the new one yet. You held it up. You wrote an article. When did that start?
Well, I mean, before I wrote the book, I wrote articles.
But no, for Edible?
For old Edible communities. But yet, like, they were how I wrote for Edible communities in Vermont and around here when it first started, as I was trying to figure out the whole, what is this regional flower stuff? I wrote for Metroland. My name was on the masthead of the old Metroland for 15, 20 years.
Oh, darn. Well, there you go. You know, it's back. You going to write for it again?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. Mostly. So I wrote about, oh, well, I shouldn't say. Should I? No.
You know, it depends on what it is. But why don't you let your conscience be your guide? I have no idea where you're going.
Just it's a bakery in Troy called The Flower Bender.
Oh, okay.
And I love this bakery, and you should.
You mean in this? Okay.
Yeah, in this article.
I'm sorry,
not
I'm loopy
in the old
today.
Ancient days.
I thought you were talking about what you wrote for Metroland.
No.
Which could have been. I mean, there were a lot of things.
Oh,
in Metroland,
I wrote a lot about a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and that was all.
So this new article is about which bakery?
Flower Bender. flower bender.
Can you show it to me again, or are you going to get it all sticky?
It'll get it all sticky, but that's okay. I think it's worth it.
Okay.
It's a bakery that uses regional grains and other, you know, socially or environmentally conscious ingredients.
All right, so how can... All right, look at that. There it is, the Flower Bender Bake Shop. Familiar joy, better ingredients by our own Amy Halloran.
Yep.
Very impressive. How can grain be...
sustainable?
Sustainable. Explain.
Okay. Where do you start? So, most grain is grown on massive farms and milled in a very refined way that gets rid of up to 40% of the ingredients. White flour is only about 60 to 70% of a wheat kernel.
Okay.
Because the bran and the germ are taken off and they go into other streams. So if you are using flours of a region, they tend to be whole grain or partially whole grain, utilizing more of the ingredients, and they tend to be on smaller farms that are using different sustainability measures like organics or regenerative certification.
But, I mean, there are other – is this the only bakery that uses sustainably done grain, local grain, or is it common?
It's not common because these ingredients cost an awful lot more. It's very – my thinking is that once community and technical colleges start using – regional grains, like, for instance, there's a program up at Centennial College in Toronto that has its own mill. And so they are teaching bakers how about their ingredients. They're teaching all culinary students about the ingredients.
Oh, I knew you'd be a person who would know a fact like that.
Yes.
About a university in Toronto that does that. No universities here. I know they have great ag tech programs at some of the SUNY schools.
I mean, Cornell is doing tons of great work in pushing the revival of regional grains, getting regional barleys, varieties that go into your beer and your distilled beverages, because they had to rework the barley varieties to suit our climate after so many years of New York not growing it.
Our guest today is Amy Halloran. It's flour and grain and baking. If you have a question or you want to jump in the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Get in on the ground floor, because by the end of it, we don't know where we're going to be at all. This always happens. All right, this email came in to voxpop@wamc.org from Chris. Chris says, well, the subject heading is interesting, flour flavor. I've been baking my own bread since my high school biology teacher assigned us to make a loaf, citing cell division. A restaurant in Norwalk, Connecticut made my favorite bread. 20 years later, I found at a farm stand in Lexington exactly the same. Could the brand of flour be the magic ingredient?
Yeah, it could, because, well, as I was mentioning before, the bran and the germ, they're what carry the flavors of a flour.
Right.
White flour is just a substrate, basically, to build all your wonderful other baked goods on. So the flour could influence it.
All right. Amy Halloran's our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. How are you doing? Have you done anything with our friend Kathy Sheehan
over at
the Hart Clewitt since you were last on?
You are going to be so happy to hear this. Really? Right? I am helping out with an exhibit called Barley Wanted, the Farming Side of Beer in Rensselaer County.
Oh, yep. do tell.
Yeah. So we are looking at the ingredients that went into the various iterations of brewing in our fair county across the river.
Okay, going how far back?
Well, going back to Dutch settlement.
Okay.
Because they came over here. They didn't say, oh, I'm not going to drink beer, because nobody did that then.
Very few people drank the water.
Exactly, exactly. And so I've been going through agricultural censuses to see where and when barley and hops were grown, thinking about the Erie Canal, looking at the history of Albany Ale and a lot of local beer stuff.
Do you remember Newman's Brewery down in, sort of near Menands, the north side of Albany?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
No,
Bill Newman's Brewery.
No, I don't.
Going
remember.
Back to the 80s, it was one of the first microbrews.
Whoa.
They had some that were like his winter ale was. I always thought this must be how it was back in the old days. It was thick and tasty and so good.
Some beer, almost like porridge. I mean, like even thicker than a porter.
And what I found out doing this show over the years, they used to make small beer for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something? Very light alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You imagine those Dutch kids running around?
Sure.
That's interesting. All right, one more email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Amy Halloran's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. This one's from Barbara. Subject heading, Bun Recipe from the Scots Kitchen by Margaret McNeil. My mom also preferred those spiced hot cross buns. Her aunts were second generation away from Scotland. Maybe this is close to Amy's recipe. Are you familiar with Scott's Kitchen by Margaret McNeil?
No, but I am writing it down.
Oh, well, why don't you look it up on your phone, even though that's cheating, but that's okay. I'm going to let it slide once. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll see what she comes up with. Let's listen to a little Frank Zappa. We'll be back. Zappa, the grand wazoo here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is our guest, and it's Food Friday. Amy, I just tried a little of the hot cross bun from the bottom. I think you're getting close.
I know.
I think you're getting very, very close.
So am I going to just run them all under the broiler? I think that's what I'm going to have to do.
Interesting.
Direct heat. But you can't figure out how they would do that in a production facility. How would they get it bristling but not burning?
Well, I wonder. Maybe they use some sort of ingredient that would handle the heat.
Or would crisp up better. I'm wondering now if barley malt rather than molasses is what I need to be.
Can you do some research and find someone still living who worked there back in the day?
I gotta dig.
All right, so regarding Barbara's recipe from the Scots Kitchen by Margaret McNeil, you had a chance to look at it now. Hot cross buns. What do you think?
I like the combination of flavors because in my experiments, this has sugar, cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, and cloves. So the cloves would definitely make it darker. I mean, part of the problem on the top of this bun is it's not very dark. And there's a lot of, a half an ounce of ginger and a half an ounce of cinnamon. That's plenty, with a half a pound of sugar. Anyway, it's got a quantity of the spices that could be what I'm not pushing it far enough.
Right.
So I'm going to give it a shot.
Amy Halloran is here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Food Friday. And this email from Roger in Clifton Park. I grew up on Fry Offers Hot Cross Buns. You see what happens? We don't know where it's going to go, and now we know where it's going to go. Roger writes, I grew up on Fryhofer's hot cross buns as far back as the 50s. I truly miss them. If you believe you've replicated the recipe, I'd love for you to share it. Below is a recipe I found on the internet a couple of years ago. I tried it. It was pretty good, but not perfect. Would welcome your comments. Do you want to look at this recipe, or do you want to just tell us what you've done?
Well, no, I'd love to see his recipe.
Okay, here you go.
Because it's always...
It's from the internet, so, I mean what could go wrong, right?
Right.
All right, well, the number here is 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is our guest. She's got a new article in Edible Capital District, which just hit the stands, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. It's a fine publication. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. What do you think?
I'm pretty sure I tried that same recipe. And it was good, but there's just something about the darkness of the spice mixture on the top that is so hard to match.
All right. So listen, let's go to the phones here. Penny in Delmar has been waiting a very long time. Penny, you're on with the great Amy Halloran.
Hello.
Hi. I have a question about sourdough starter. I learned that there are two varieties, the regular one and the dehydrated one. What is the difference and which one do you prefer?
Well, they're just different ways for you to get sourdough starter started. So a starter is a community of lactic acid bacteria and wild yeast, and you will be cultivating it with flour and water in your kitchen. And the thing is, you keep on feeding this to grow your bread, and you create more of it all the time. So maintaining a starter means that you'll have starter to give to someone else. So the reason people dehydrate it is because they have so much of it, and it's a good way to start it. I have never started a starter from scratch, which is a process of mixing flour and water, taking out a little bit, and keeping on adding flour and water.
Why do you have to take out a little bit?
Because they consume all the active sugars in the, it's fermentation, right?
Right.
It's consuming sugars.
Yes.
And you'd have this giant sourdough starter that you wouldn't be able to afford to feed or know what to do with. But dehydrated starter is a great way to get going if you don't have somebody near you who's going to share their starter. Dehydrated starter, you just add flour and water and it jump starts it. I occasionally run my starter forgetfully awry in the refrigerator, don't bake long enough. And so my friend Ellie has given me her dehydrated starter that I just keep a stash of, and then I'll add it to my starter to get it rolling.
You've mentioned this Ellie very often.
Yes.
You should bring her in sometime when you do the show.
Well, she's in Maine, and so I'm going there next week to...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Bangor, Maine. I'm going to University of Maine at Orono to talk about my writing life and talk with her journalism students.
Oh, cool. All right, Penny, you want to follow up at all before we let you go?
No, that's okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. So you're going up, and they're just going to talk about you. It's your life. It's like the Merv Griffin show. You're going to talk about yourself. That's great.
Describe myself to myself.
I love it. Number here is 800-348-2551. Our guest today is Amy Halloran. It's Food Friday. The hot cross buns are fantastic. Rosalie writes in, I made Easter bread and shaped it and froze it. Should I transfer it to the fridge on Saturday night and let it rise at room temp or defrost on Sunday and then bake it?
Oh, dear. I don't do that often.
No.
I would think I would consult whatever recipe you decided to go on that freeze your dough limb, because that's always something I get a little nervous about.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
why?
Because I don't do it normally, and anything you don't do all the time, you're like, are you going to work? Are you going to work?
I'm amazed that you can dehydrate sourdough starter.
Sure.
Incredible.
Yeah. But I would guess that you're going to put it in the fridge to defrost overnight. Sometimes people bake straight from the freezer. So I'd really, I'm not going to be okay. The deciding vision on that. I'm not a decider.
Amy Halloran, I think George W. Bush was the decider. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. And let's go back to the phones and talk to our friend in Schenectady, Joan. Hello, Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Amy. Oh, my goodness. I tried to resist calling, and I just can't do it.
That's okay.
Hey, Ray, just real quick. Yeah. Awesome show yesterday. That was
The Science Forum. Oh, yeah, that was fun. And, you know, Dr. Kevin Knuth was on because I wanted him to talk about some of the dynamics of the orbit for the space flight. Mm-hmm. And he had such trouble with the parking app that he had to eventually leave and then go out and repark the car and then come back in on the show. And, yeah, we just carried on. Anyway, what's on your mind today?
That's what makes you a good host.
Thank you.
Well, what's on my mind, Amy, is I'm really trying to push the benefit of everything I eat. So when it comes to bread flours and the milling choices that you have, I want to bump up the protein, and as much as I love the sweetness, I just want more protein in my my bread stocks.
Huh. Does bread have protein?
Well, wheat has protein. I mean, everything has protein, and we're not going to go down the protein highway.
Really?
What are you trying to do, Joan? Are you trying to bake a different bread?
Yeah. Like, what should I choose for flours and rather than, you know, like the cake flour is going to be high processed with the milling choices.
Oh,
so what's
okay.
on the other end of that?
I mean, I would suggest trying spelt flour, a whole grain spelt flour.
Oh, spelt. Okay.
Yep. And I just think that is super tasty and has a lot of nutrition. If you really want to go old school, Cornell published the Cornell bread recipe, but that was, I'm pretty sure it was white flour, and that had wheat germ in it, and
really?
Bran, and all these things, maybe even some eggs. You know, you can
Ooh.
Do that kind of stuff, Baron. I think playing with things like that, sometimes people will add a ground up nut flour, but, you know, I suggest using a recipe because, each intervention you do with an alternative ingredient is going to change the texture and characteristic of the baked good. So if you, you can go off grid once you're familiar with the flour and what it does, like, but you don't want to go getting discouraged and then have to eat some punishing experiments.
Well, that's
like
a nice way
to
put it.
Like I usually do.
But have fun with it. And
thanks.
Yeah, start with spelt. Why not?
All right.
Sounds good.
Joan,
right,
have a lovely weekend, friend. We'll talk to you soon. 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is our guest. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And let's head up to Brattleboro, Vermont, shall we? Joyce. Hello, Joyce.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
My question is, do you know of people in this area that are raising and selling the old ancient wheats? When I was in Maine a number of years ago at the Common Ground Fair, there was an Israeli woman who had this incredible display about all the old ancient wheats that she had collected seed from around the world. And I can't remember whether she was from Vermont or where she was from.
Of course, Amy's going to know all about this,
yeah,
Joyce.
You're
so
talking
just go ahead.
About Ellie Ragosa, who I
yes.
believe, right? Who?
Yes, I think that's. It was a number of years ago, but it was so interesting, and it was she was raising all these ancient wheats that she had collected the seed from all around the world.
Yeah, they're really beautiful grains. The problem is that, you know, unless you grow these unusual grains in the backyard, you're not going to find them, not of the extraordinary range that she had. She was really trying out test plots. There are grain farmers who will grow things like einkorn, spelt is a... Mm-hmm. Okay, so the name ancient grains...
Oh, this drives you nuts.
It's not
it?
A scientific classification.
Okay.
It's a marketing category. it is. It doesn't have any scientific place. But it's a way that we think about the oldest grains that were cultivated, einkorn, emmer, and spelt. And as I say that, I realize I don't know if rice was cultivated sooner than that. So I don't mean, I'm talking about your bread family of cereal grains, not rice and not amaranth and not things like that. But around here, you're going to look for spelt and emmer and einkorn. And you can find small farms products at co-ops. Co-ops are an excellent place to look for that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes farmer markets. And I recommend trying that out.
Okay.
Because I know that she was actually selling them online, but it was a number of years ago. I don't even know whether she's still alive or anything, you know?
I haven't heard otherwise, and I haven't looked her up in a while,
right,
but try it out.
Yeah, well, thanks, Joyce. I appreciate the call. 800-3- I knew you would know that. 800-348-2551. You were probably at that event, weren't you?
No, but I've been to other places with her, and I know I can picture exactly the jewel-like bouquets of grains that she had, because you know, grains really are quite pretty. And when the older varieties often have awns on them. And
what's an awn?
An awn is these spikes that come out from the grain heads and off of the grain kernels. And it's to keep critters from eating it.
No way.
Yeah.
Are there some so-called ancient grains, and we won't start that again, we've been through this road before, are there some that you just can't grow in North America?
Well, a lot of them. I mean, okay. So, thinking about growing grains at all. Grains are not native. Cereal, wheat, barley, not native to the Americas.
No way.
No way.
I mean,
corn is native to the Americas.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. You see, that's why I don't let people cheat on the show, because then they talk to the phone and the phone talks back. It's very embarrassing.
I don't even know what I said, but I can't risk that same sequence of letters because the phone is off, but it spoke to us.
If it talks to you again, just sit on it for the rest of the show.
Oh, my goodness.
So where were we?
Where were we? Okay. So grains that are native to the Americas.
Right.
You know, European settlers brought their grains with them. And rye, wheat, and barley, the primary grains.
And they grow well here. I mean, not everywhere, but
they didn't grow well in coastal New England. The Dutch were wicked happy at the Hudson Valley because wheat and well, the Dutch didn't care about barley, but they cared about wheat and shipping it to their other colonies and for their beer, because the Dutch like that.
Yeah.
Beer. Yeah.
So stipulated. 800-348-2551 is the number. Amy Halloran is our guest today. And let's go back to the phones. Joe is in Niskayuna. Joe, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good. You know, we're having some technical issues with Amy's phone, but otherwise we're fine. What's up?
I have to tell you, Ray Graff, you do a fabulous job. You take some subjects that are maybe not that interesting and make them interesting.
Well, that was
a
shot at Amy.
You have a great sense of humor.
Hey, man, thank you.
I've met Amy. I just wanted to say, you were talking about Fry Offer's cinnamon buns. I used to love those. The only place that I know of that makes them, and they only make this the last week of them because they make them for the Easter season, is Bellinopoli in Troy, and then they ship them to their Latham store. You can buy those now, but there's only the next couple of days left, and they will sell out.
Yes.
And I don't work for Bellinopoli.
That's fine, and I don't either, but I'll tell you what, I love going there on a Sunday because the donuts are really good.
They are great donuts.
Yeah. They are.
Yeah.
But they have two types of hot cross buns. One is the traditional. The other one is the cinnamon, exactly like Fry Offer's.
Give them a shot.
Wow.
Thank you. Maybe
you could reverse engineer the Bellinopoli, and then you have the, you know.
I'm trying.
Or maybe you slip them a 20, you get the recipe. Hey, Joe, thanks a lot. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Amy Halloran. And it's fun to talk bread and flour and grain and such. We'll be back.
I think tickets are getting close. I mean, we have some left, but if you want to go join us at the Landis Arboretum on April 22nd for a live taping of Gardening Vox Pop, you better go soon to wamc.org/on the road and find out more about it. I talked to Peter Hughes. Tickets are going pretty fast. But if you want to join us, we'd love to have you there. Fred Breglia will be there, and Dale Isla Riggs will be there, and Greg Ward will be there. And you'll have a chance. There'll be no calls, obviously. We're recording it. But you, if you're in the audience, you can ask questions. It'll be fun. So it's wamc.org/on the road. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Amy Halloran is here, and I had some more of the hot cross buns. They're pretty dang good. You're getting very close.
Getting there.
Yeah.
We're getting there.
Getting to that Fryhofer zenith.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see. We did this one from Roe. Let's go to Linda at Buxton. So nice to listen to you, Amy, on WAMC, and to know that you and Francis are still doing so much great environmental work.
My son went to Buxton School.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. My older son, Francis, who's a very plant-oriented person.
Yeah.
He really initiated my education in agriculture, for real.
Really?
Yeah. Because he was super curious about it, and he would say things like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to grow all my own food.
And what a great aspiration, though. Good
yeah.
Lord. That's amazing.
Right. But too much food self-sufficiency, too much ideas of self-sufficiency. I mean, agriculture has always been about a lot of people and a lot of plants working together so that we can eat.
So you like community and not self-sufficient.
Yeah.
So you don't want Francis to go off the grid?
Oh, no.
No?
Oh, no, no. I don't think he wants to either.
No, you sure?
I am sure.
I'd like to go off the grid.
Oh, Ray, I don't think you'd have so much fun.
I'm going to dig me a bunker up out in Idaho way and, you know.
Yeah, as long as you could have a radio show and talk.
Nah, no way.
You wouldn't miss this, Ray. Listen,
I don't even speak when I get off the air.
You're such a liar.
Elise writes in, flour for feeding starter. Does it matter what kind of flour we use to feed our starter?
Great question. I love thinking about this.
Okay.
Okay, so the starter will go along and keep going along. But it will behave differently when you change flours. So it's, again, about you and your observational skills. So I was told by some of my teachers to stick with one flour so that you know where it is in the cycle
right.
of readiness.
Yeah.
To go.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, you know, I made a bread that was largely corn recently. Cornmeal.
Cornbread?
It's a yeasted, a sourdough cornbread.
Wow.
That's made with a porridge of cornmeal. A baker down in North Carolina, who's actually going to be the keynote speaker up at the Kneading Conference in Maine this summer, the last weekend in July.
The Kneading Conference.
The Kneading Conference.
So people with strong hands are going to this conference.
Or strong cereal desires. C-E-R-E.
Right, I understand.
Right, yeah.
This show's bizarre.
Yeah, anyway, so
Dr. Frankenstein making cornmeal sourdough and all this other stuff. All right, just go on.
Going back to that idea of corn being the native grain to the Americas, as climate change happens, perhaps we should retreat to grains that are more suited to this climate. And of course, seeds and varieties are adapting all the time.
Right.
So I'm not, I don't feel precious about heirloom or heritage seeds. I think that modern seeds are fine. Crossing seeds to meet these new seasons with heavy rainfall and crazy drought that we're encountering, we need it, you know? But anyway, the premise of this bread was, let's use a lot of corn. Because this is where we are.
Right.
And indeed, before the Erie Canal, their cornmeal rye, before the Erie Canal opened up Western New York, where we had an initial wheat belt, and then the wheat belt of the Midwest, and then the further west, traveling back here, it was much easier to get cornmeal and rye. than wheat, because wheat is a bit fickier. How do you say that
more
word?
More finicky. Yes.
Than corn or rye. So a lot of breads were corn and rye.
Yeah.
And so next time, clearly, I'm going to have to bring you some mostly cornbread. Because that stuff was really,
really
cool.
Okay. Now, so did we answer the writer's question about the right flour to use for the sourdough?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I went off the rails.
I'll
no, I didn't answer that.
We're like a couple of real old timers sitting at the home. Hey, where were we talking about? All right, go ahead.
Do you have my walker?
Yep.
So just maintaining consistency in your starter. For your own sake, so that you can keep observing it. And the only thing that's changing is the season of your house.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But, I got on that corn track because...
Are we going again?
We're going back again.
I think I'm
going
to go get a cup of coffee.
I got on that corn track because that cornbread has a corn starter. And when you make the bread, you can either... start a corn starter from scratch, or you can take some of your regular starter and feed it corn until it's as corny as you want it to be.
Okay. So the upshot is it doesn't necessarily matter. It's your preference what flour you use to start?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I use rye. Rye is my favorite.
Why is that?
Because rye is a very busy kernel.
What do you mean?
There's a lot of enzymes on the bran of a rye kernel.
And why is that a good thing?
Well, busy. Enzymatic activity. It's going to go boom, boom.
Yeah, okay. So it'll make the sourdough really thrive.
Boogie.
Okay.
Boogie.
Deb writes in, popovers, help. And by the way, if you want to call, we still have a little time left, 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Amy Halloran about... well, whatever it is we're talking about, 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Deb writes in, popovers, help, all caps. Please tell me the secret to puffy, tasteful popovers, trying to make them for the weekend. Can you suggest a flour to use? Thank you for your expertise. And that's from Deb.
Wow. Well, I've never had trouble with my popovers.
Well, that's because you're Amy Halloran. Deb is having trouble.
I wonder if it's more the eggs.
Well, what do you put in your popovers?
Popovers are
more... if you say cornmeal, I'm leaving, all right?
They're mainly eggs.
Okay.
So the thing about a popover is it's leavening with eggs, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
You know, I made a cake with a friend, a young friend who was turning 10 years old, and he picked out a cake from a European cookbook. And Europe is not as fond of baking powder as America is.
Really? Why is that?
Because their baking traditions evolved without our fervent inventiveness.
Yeah.
And... you know, of course, so baking powder was a product of a guy from Troy named Eben Norton Horsford.
He invented it?
First patent in America.
You're kidding me. When
no,
was this?
That was 1860-something.
Did we ever talk about this before?
Probably not.
Amazing. All right, go on.
His papers are over at RPI because he went to RPI.
Yep.
And he... so he was an early student over there in Rensselaer, when it was called just Rensselaer and very small. And after he went to RPI, he went over and he studied with Justus von Liebig, who's the father of modern chemistry. And their experiments were looking at chemical interactions all the way from field to food.
Even back then?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Especially back then, because as science was beginning, or science of that century, the philosophy of science, I'm not an expert on this. I'm wading into dangerous territory.
That's all right.
Here.
Listen, we've been in the deep end for the whole show, so just keep going.
So, trying to figure out how to raise bread without... yeast was a big concern. There were a number of worries about bread in the 19th century. One of the things was that the alcohol released in the fermentation process was harmful to your digestion and bad for you. And
but they've been making bread for hundreds and thousands of years.
Yes, but there was a lot of blah, blah, blah.
Okay, all right, whatever.
I have, it's really, that's a thing I don't quite understand, but I'm endlessly curious about the temperance attitude.
Well, this was a temperance thing?
It was part of temperance. It was part of digestion.
Good
Lord. We're afraid of gluten now, or maybe we're getting less afraid of gluten as time goes on, and it turns out you can't turn off your love for bread. I mean, we're not talking about wheat intolerances and celiac.
There's still enough time for a lot of calls about gluten-free, so I don't know if you want to bring this up.
Bring them on.
All right.
But there was a lot of mental trouble, social fear of the alcohol in bread dough for a lot of different levels.
That's crazy.
And it wasn't just temperance. It was about diet. It was about modernization. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. Oh, surely I've talked about Sylvester Graham, father of the Graham cracker.
I think we probably
We've
have.
We've talked about that.
Believe it or not, my memory's not that firm anymore. So I'm just going to say yes.
Yeah. So anyway, Eben Norton Horsford, Baking Powder. Excellent book I recommend called The Baking Powder Wars by Linda Civitello. Oh, we were talking about popovers. Got to get back to the popovers.
I got to tell you, this is one. It's like a fugue state, the whole show. We start one place, one question, and then we're completely off track.
Off the rails. We are not on the train.
Are we okay?
I think
are
we're
we
okay.
Right?
Are
we all right?
We're okay.
All right, so going back to that, the popovers.
The
right.
Popovers. Okay, so as I was saying, I baked a birthday cake from an incredible, she's a Ukrainian cook named Olia Hercules, and she had a recipe for a birthday cake that was leavened entirely by eggs.
Huh.
No baking powder.
How do you do that?
No baking soda. You put
them
in your stand mixer.
Let them puff up like a souffle.
And they go.
Amazing.
They go. And then you fold in your sifted flour. Maybe the sugar, you put the sugar in with the eggs, and that's going and going and going. And so, I mean, this could be the problem. Maybe your flour is not so significant as whatever way you have to beat those eggs. Because they, for a popover, for a cake, there's a lot of arm strength that you're going to have to put into it. I got a KitchenAid in the basement. I got a KitchenAid on the counter. We don't want to be without our KitchenAids in my house. I need I have a separate bread mixer.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, Deb, we have like 5 minutes left. If that answer was at all satisfactory, just email us again at voxpop@wamc.org. Frankly, I almost forgot the question, but I'm sure you might have gotten something out of it. Amy Halloran is our guest today. What are you working on now?
Oh, I'm thinking about I went to a couple of grain conferences that were largely farmer-centered.
Yeah, so where were these?
One was over in Ithaca. It was a soil and crops conference.
So this is a Cornell thing?
That was a Cornell thing. And another was up at the University of Vermont. And they're both efforts to get farmers talking to each other about their organic practices. And in the case of Vermont, there's a lot about regional markets, you know, growing for regional markets. And so it was there. They had a baker's showcase there.
Oh, yeah.
That was super fun. It was just all these bakers
up in Vermont
that brought their own stuff. And you got to taste everything that they made.
You know, you talk about regional baking, and Vermont is such an interesting sort of landscape. I was reading about Ethan Allen, who, by the way, was just the crankiest son of a gun in the East. But I mean, these farmers, they had a tough time. I mean, how do you grow enough to eat up there in the 1700s?
Or anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, they were happy when New York became available and they could get away from their rocky soil. But Vermont has had a really strong grain effort for 23 years. A group of farmers wanted to take advantage of the nascent organic dairy market. And so they wanted to grow organic grains. And so they got together with Extension over at UVM and said, hey, we want to figure this out, you know? And it's a real collaborative effort, and it's so fun to see the way that farmers and millers and bakers and all the researchers are talking to each other. There was a farmer from Wisconsin who came to talk about his organic habits, and especially with rye and using rye as a rye crop as a fertilizer.
Really?
Yeah, because that's one of the things of principles of organic agriculture is you can use a nurse crop to, it's a principle of growing things.
Yeah.
You can create the conditions necessary in the soil for the next crop with the previous crop.
You know, your enthusiasm never stops. Now, I don't know. Do you remember how many years you've been on the show now? I mean, I have no idea.
No, it's a forever.
It's a long.
One of those. Yeah, yeah.
And I think early on, it was pancakes.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you have, I don't know if you've expanded your interests or you've always had all of these interests. I don't know how you have enough energy in you and enough time in the day to do all these things.
Well, luckily, I have a sofa that's my best friend, and I can read a lot on my sofa. And you can look at all these resources online, too.
Do you like that? You like books, right?
I love books. But, you know, when there are digitized historical papers that are searchable,
yeah.
Oh, that's grand.
All right, we have about a minute and a half left. Here's one. I don't know if you can answer this. Given the way we've been going today, we'll need another hour. Uma writes in, how do you make a croissant?
Well, I don't. So that's how.
Wow. No, that's all you got?
No, so I'm not even going to try to say that word because a pronunciation is the
croissant.
Very devil. Yeah, you can say it. You can say it.
Right.
So it's a laminated dough is you make a, you know, a wheat dough with your regular leavening, but then you're going to be incorporating multiple flattened layers of butter. It's a lot of work. That's why I don't make them. If I want to have that kind of treat, somebody is often going to have what's called a pastry sheeter to help incorporate the butter in a gazillion layers.
Yeah,
on that.
You know, you should probably just go to Chef Gail Sokol's house because that's the sort of thing she's all over.
Oh, she would love that.
Yeah, and you know, we did focaccia a couple weeks ago.
I heard. Yeah.
You know, all the things that I learn on this show that I forget as soon as we're done. It's pretty amazing.
Well, that show made me go home and make focaccia.
Really?
That, yes, it did. And I really like it.
All right, Amy Halloran, this very odd edition of Food Friday where we have just gone, you know, it just happens.
We're on the grain train, Ray.
It's almost done. So if people want to get, we're on the grain train. That's one train we're on. If people want to find you, how do they do that?
Okay, so I was going to tell you. Another thing I've been up to is I opened up this new section of my newsletter called Baking Time, and I'm featuring different stories about other people. So Baking Time, if you go to amyhalloran.substack.com, you will find the first in a series, and it's a Czechoslovakian baker from Michigan who's writing about her explorations in heritage baking, and we'll be having more her soon.
How do you know all these people? So it's amyhalloran.substack.com.
Yep.
All right, we're done.
Are we ever done? Are we ever done?
I don't know. It might continue in the hall. Amy Halloran, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Support comes from Barrington Brewery, Great Barrington, celebrating 30 years with solar brewed beer, served 6 days a week in Serbum. Let's start again. Uncle Ray's having a day. Barrington Brewery, Great Barrington, celebrating 30 years with solar brewed beer, served 6 days a week, serving 9 beers on tap and 1 cask conditioned ale. Full menu available for lunch and dinner, 413-528-8282.
I think my hour with Amy has even softened my brain a little more. Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard and Garden Center, Great Barrington, celebrating 41 years, now open for the season with many cultivars of early spring blooming shrub, witch hazel, windyhillfarminc.com. All right, that's it. Thanks to Mike Bowen, Barb King. Thanks to you. Thanks to Amy Halloran. Thanks to me.